Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to the Progressive Britain podcast. This is the podcast with the unpopular opinion that progressive centre-left politics has a lot to offer the modern world. Do you hear that? That nervy silence you hear is the sound of uncertainty. A Prime Minister on the brink, a cabinet in revolt, a Brexit deal in tatters, and no clear plan to guide us out of this mess. I'm Connor Pope, and I'll be talking to Wirral South MP Alison McGovern and Progress Deputy Director Stephanie Lloyd about what progressives should do when the Conservatives abdicate responsibility. Last week, two cabinet ministers, Dominic Raab and Esther McVeigh, resigned over the draft withdrawal arrangement, while a further five Tories resigned from other positions. At the time of recording, Monday lunchtime, all the talk is about whether 48 Tory MPs will put forward a motion of no confidence in Theresa May, which would lead to a leadership contest. At a time like this, the country really needs strong government.
Strong and stable.
Oh, you got there first. That was the joke I was immediately going to make.
But this is part of the problem. This is like the most crucial point of the Brexit negotiations so far. And there is a complete abdication of responsibility from the Tories, isn't there?
And part of me blames Theresa May because this sort of thing she should have boxed. You know, she should have thought to herself ahead of time, if I'm going to get this deal through, what are the composite parts of that? And I'd have thought, number one, cabinet agreement. Number two, the agreement of the House of Commons. Like, these things are quite obvious and she didn't really get them sorted out. But on the other hand, I don't really blame Theresa May because actually some of the people that we're talking about have engaged in a kind of politics of absolutely no compromise. So from the point at which Boris Johnson and David Davis resigned over the Chequers agreement, you could see that even though they couldn't really put their finger on an alternative, essentially these are kind of burn it down, rip it up type people, and not like let's find common ground type people. And therefore, you know, who do you really blame in this situation? The people who've tried to find a way through, or the people who've just sat on the sidelines and resolutely refused all compromise?
This rip it up and burn it down mentality does seem to be kind of encapsulating of the beliefs of like modern day populists, doesn't it? And kind of like, oh, this thing kind of isn't working a bit, let's just get rid of it, and I'm sure whatever we do next will just be fine. And it's kind of going, well, maybe some of these institutions and structures that you want to rip down have stopped things getting a lot worse.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's definitely the lesson from this, that maybe the strength of institutions depends on everybody being prepared to sign up to some basic principles of debate. And what's happened is, like, people have been allowed to forget that responsibility that we all have to those institutions, whether it's a functioning House of Commons or a functioning cabinet government. Everybody's sort of just like walking away and saying, oh, no, thanks. It's easier to be the person who's pointing the finger, shouting, being angry than it is to be the person who's listening and compromising.
So what you said there a minute ago was that you partly blame Theresa May. And obviously, you say it's harder to be the person who actually has to do something. How important do we think that the Prime Minister is at this moment? Because if it's just someone in the Tory party, then does it really matter that much if the deal's already been done and the EU says, like, we're not going to change that?
Well, I think if so, let's come back to kind of where the Tory party are and the sort of I mean, it would be wrong to laugh at another person's grief, but you know, it's the Tories. But so last week Steve Baker and Jacob Rees-Mogg walked out of their meeting of the European Research Group, this group of hard right Tory MPs, anti-Europeans, who basically said, you know, they basically said, like, look, we're going to send 48 letters. We're going to trigger a leadership election in the Tory party. Basically, they were trying to stop Theresa May being prime minister anymore. And we've had, how many days has it been since then? 4, 5. And it is unclear.
It's not going very well for them.
Have they got 48 letters?
It's not a very good coup,
letters?
Is it?
No. I mean, I would think that the first thing you ought to have done if you were Steve Baker, who's the organiser of this ERG group, is before you do that, make sure you've got 48.
Yeah.
I mean, it's only 1 to 48. It's not a big number to count to.
Also, at a time like this, with, you know, Brexit negotiations the way you are, they are, presumably if you want to, your kind of people to take over that, then the...
should show a basic level of competence, shouldn't you, really?
But also the thing that you really want to nail down is expectation management. If we take over Brexit negotiations, everything will definitely be fine. Also, we will definitely get 48 letters. It's like, you can't even get 48 letters. That's definitely the easier of those two things.
And in order to get 48 letters, right, you probably want to have, I don't know, a candidate to be prime minister. Like, you would think that that was the first thing that was necessary. But all Steve Baker seemed to want to say was, well, you know, we've got lots of good people and they all need to sit in a room and sort it out between them. It's like, no, mate. Like, you are behind schedule if you are still in the business of sitting people down in a room and having a candidate. You know, I mean, Lord knows, you know, I've seen these things in the Labour Party and they're not always easy. But they appeared to be, this time last week, the ERG appeared to be in an incredibly strong position. I wouldn't want to second guess it, but I think they look more and more like they're in quite a weak position.
God, it'd be terrible if they've got the 48 letters by the time this podcast comes out.
It would be really terrible.
I was like, 25 days.
Yeah.
Should have done it sooner.
Yeah. So.
What was amazing, I don't know what you guys were to on Thursday when all the resignations came.
Literally did not stop staring at the television.
Because I was on a train.
/ I was definitely doing loads of work.
I was on a train that left at 9 o'clock. Mm. And so just as it set off, my partner turned to me looking at her phone and went, Dominic Raab has resigned. And the man, we were on a table and the man opposite us on the table genuinely turned around and went, Dominic Raab has resigned. And for a minute I was like, is he being sarcastic? But before you knew it, like, it felt like the whole train carriage was discussing how you get to 48 letters.
when the message came out that Theresa May was going to do a press conference at 5 o'clock, and that, you know, the lectern was being put into place outside 10 Downing Street. I mean, my whole team that works with me all went collectively like insane in that moment.
Not another one.
And I've been waiting. I can only say that in, like, you know, all of, like, team We're All South, we were all sort of like collectively like holding our breath, like, are we about to have a general election again?
One of my favourite bits about that as well is that one of my best mates was going on a date that night and she ended up being late because the press conference overran. And I was like, I think this is why we're all single.
Does she even work in politics?
She does.
Oh, right.
She does. But still, like, it's not a legitimate, well, it is a legitimate reason in my world, but I think for most people, the person she was going on a date with does not work in politics. Well, Theresa May was having a press conference tonight to see what was going. Seems all a bit odd in the rest of the world.
It does.
In days like this, Alison, do the Labour MPs in their WhatsApp groups do exactly what all the rest of us do and just text each other being like, do you think she's going to go? I think she's going to go. And like, just speculate and stuff.
Yeah, but like, my favourite bit as well, though, when everybody's got that friend who also pretends that they are the BBC breaking news notification, right? So they're like, Dominic Raab has resigned. I'm like, I know, I got the same notification that you did. You are not in the loop here.
Yeah, but There is always that kind of element of like being the first to the WhatsApp group, isn't it?
True.
You know, like, who is the most?
Oh, so you're that person then, Alison?
I am not that person. I am very much not that person. Like, when this comes out, there will now be a load of Labour MPs screenshotting when I have been that person. But yeah, no, everybody I think is in the same boat, just going from moment to moment, not that clear on what could happen next.
Supposing that a hard Brexiteer did take over next, and essentially in a show of macho brinkmanship, turned around and went, we don't care about this deal, it's no good. If the EU won't give us another one, we're just going to go for no deal. Do you think that would change the complexion in Parliament a bit towards how people want to, like, will there be enough Tory MPs then who just go, no, that is clearly the wrong thing to do and kind of push them into a softer Brexit position?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that if a really quite hard Brexiteer, if someone of the likes of, let's use Boris Johnson, because mm-hmm. actually I don't think Boris Johnson is that likely to become leader of the Tory party, although touching wood here, banging the table. But say Boris Johnson became the new prime minister, actually I think that would cause quite a lot of division within the Conservative Party. I think that there are a lot of Tory MPs who are already on the record as saying they'll be very unhappy about that. So I think that probably does change the dynamic for them. And I think actually seeing the likes of Stephen Hammond, my colleague on the Treasury Select Committee, going back into government, somebody who had advocated for a single market type Brexit. And I think there's a sense in which, you know, they feel that the Prime Minister ought to be defended from the ERG. So in some ways, the ERG of their actions have been quite counterproductive because they're essentially pushing other members of the Tory party away from that hard Brexit position.
Because this is it. Does it then move to a like no deal or people's vote type situation?
Yeah.
And that's the bit where it's like, does it polarise people so far then? If her deal then basically becomes off the table, those are kind of feel like the options that you're left with.
Yeah, and no deal, for all the reasons that people have talked about at length, is a very, very, very bad idea. And the number of members of parliament who are in the John Redwood place, John Redwood actively says that no deal, you know, WTO option, as he calls it, would be a good idea. I mean, it's absolute madness in terms of the lack of legal guarantees for people's insurance contracts, for what that would mean for the border. For, you know, it's completely wrong in my view, and I just think there's absolutely no working majority for the lack of a deal. Therefore, sort of one of the only routes left is really giving it back to the public, letting the public have the final say, which is broadly what I think a lot of people are concluding.
We need to take a short break there, but after the break we'll be discussing proper politics, not just internal Tory party wranglings.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Back onto the issue of people's vote quickly. Do we think that things are heading towards that direction? Theresa May's rhetoric over the past few days seems to have shifted towards a my deal or remain as the options in an attempt to spook Brexiteers into backing her. And John McDonnell signalled over the weekend that a people's vote is more likely than a general election because of the Fixed Term Parliament Act. Steph, do you think things have changed?
I think they are. I think we are certainly shifting far more towards that. I think you can see public opinion is moving more towards that way now. But also then in terms of the parliamentary arithmetic, there is no majority for anything in Parliament currently. But as we were saying earlier, I think when we do get to that situation where if it becomes her deal is so untenable, and I mean, let's face it, it's not a deal. It's what we leave on. Alison will be very pleased that I've said that. In that sense, it is not the deal. It is not the deal.
I refer the Honourable Lady to my very long article that makes this point again and again.
It is not the deal.
Legal agreement and a political statement.
Yeah.
And I think, not a deal.
You know, if we move more towards that being an untenable position in and of itself, I think it is going to get to the point where even people who originally were quite sceptical, quite hesitant, were from very leave areas, who wanted to, in what they believed, do totally the right thing for their constituents and try and honour what they voted for and find that way forward. I think it is going to get to a point where if Parliament cannot do it, the country has to do so. And I think the party's certainly moving towards that. Jeremy's making some slightly odd noises all over the place. But, you know, as we're seeing, John McDonnell, as you said, came out over the weekend saying it's more likely. But the arithmetic to get to a general election just feels almost impossible. So I think it's definitely what we could see happening. I think it certainly should be what we see happening.
It seems ridiculous that a time like this, so much attention is on internal Tory affairs. This withdrawal arrangement, not a deal, is really significant. And even if we don't think it will pass, it needs to be examined properly. Alison, you've read some of it, all of it. I've not even read.
I mean, so the first thing is, it is a draft legal agreement and it is also very legalistic. So the clause in it that made me, I suppose, dwell on where we are the most is the part where there is a clause in it that says that both parties agree that both parties will act in good faith. So it is very legalistic in that sense, because normally when we write the law in the House of Commons, we do so on the basis of the constitution that already exists and the presumptions that are in our constitution. Whereas this is an agreement between between the UK and the collection of countries that is the European Union. And so it needs to kind of re-establish all of those legal principles. So really, I think people, if they do kind of flick through it, most people will be blinded by a lot of the legal terminology, which is designed to give legal certainty in this very uncertain situation. So, you know, the important bits and the reason why people have described it as a huge transfer of sovereignty is where it ascribes the process for deciding a lot of these legal matters. And I think it's necessary, but actually reading through it, you know, if you want to leave the EU, it's a necessary thing to do. But actually the thing that it doesn't tell us is the most crucial thing that will affect our economy to come, which is what is the future relationship? And for that, we have a seven pages, that is all, political statement. And some of those sentences, they're not even proper English. Like that is the bit that I would really recommend people reading. I mean, unless you are, you know, a lawyer, I wouldn't recommend people like in detail try and decipher the 585 pages of the withdrawal agreement. I would suggest, you know, reading someone else who's a expert in that matter. And you can find a lot of those on Twitter. And, you know, I'll certainly retweet a lot of them. But the thing to read yourself is the political agreement, which describes where we're going in the future. And the bit on freedom of movement, for example, is practically indecipherable. It's like two sentences of nothing. Now, that is the statement that's going to govern whether or not, you know, a young person in my constituency who, for example, say might want to get a job abroad for a couple of years, maybe working in, like, I don't know, Ibiza doing, you know, the holiday season there, or like a young person that I represent who might want to go and do a term abroad, you know, in a German university, say, this is the agreement that's going to govern whether they have those chances in life or not. And the idea that I'm betting their futures on seven pages of very flimsy stuff, I think, is madness.
This is
not going to do it.
On that issue particularly, I mean, we've got a member, a guy called Charles Owen, who runs a company called European Pubs, and we've done some really good work with him, actually. He's been on the podcast before.
Yeah.
And he literally turned around to us the other day, and he was like, I'm now at the point where it's either, do I go, like, if we have no deal, do I go bankrupt or do I break the law? Because if we don't have an agreement, he's legally not allowed to have people work in France and places like that on the continent. And if he doesn't, then his whole business goes overnight, totally down the drain.
And that's exactly the question before us. Like, do we put our faith in seven pages of pretty flimsy stuff from Theresa May when everybody sort of broadly expects her years as prime minister might be numbered? I mean, I just think most MPs looking at that thinking, that's not a gamble I'm going to take.
The thing that surprised me as well, I mean, there is a level of resilience I didn't know was even humanly possible. And watching her on Thursday, both in the Commons and then also doing that press statement. But it was the point now as well where it's like, there's a point where resilience becomes delusional. And it's like, at what point is she going to actually realise that the deal that she currently has is not getting anywhere through Parliament? And,
no.
You know, it's someone has to move at some point. Someone has to be the adult.
Yeah, and I think that's,
as
we were saying before, I think that's why in the end, you know, there was a possible world where if 18 months ago, the Tories had realised that this was the sort of big constitutional shift that needed the support of both parties, there was a possible world where we could have all looked at this and thought some sort of single market customs union option is where we're going to get to. Then what we need to think about is how do we have influence in the European Union if we're not part of the political union? We needed to work that question through. But the Tories never did that. They decided to have a fight amongst themselves. And so that option, I mean, you know, as chair of the Labour campaign for the single market, we really tried to push that. I think our party's policy got to a good place. But that deal, you know, is not really on the table because the Tories never wanted to compromise on a cross-party basis. So the only thing left to us is a general election. Tories, I doubt, will vote for that. Or the deal goes to the public. So that is why, in the end, I think, Steph, your kind of grown up in the room argument gets you to think that probably it has to be the country that sorts this out.
So I've not read any of it, and frankly, I don't plan to. But Alan Simpson, who's on the Progress Strategy Board, read it over the weekend, all 585 pages of it. He was texting us some of his thoughts about it. One of his lines in particular kind of struck with me, where he said, essentially, it's a reduction in British influence in exchange for a reduction in British access, which seems to be, in one sentence, essentially a summing up of the entirety of the kind of Brexit that the Tories are pursuing. Is remarkable.
That's absolutely correct. And if you were to ask the ERG why they want to pursue that, they would say, well, actually, a pure Brexit where we just said, you know, we'll even more reduce our access and even more reduce our influence will open us up to these great gains that could be made from deals elsewhere. So whether it's, you know, they want to basically have this big trade deal with America, which I, you know, we all know what that means. So if you don't think that that's realistic and that we could exchange our trade with the European Union with, I don't know, a free trade deal with New Zealand, population, what, 4 million people?
Something like that, maybe less, yeah.
Then you have to go for sort of the way that Theresa May has gone. But because she's hamstrung by the hard right in her party, she can't do it in a way that, you know, embraces the European model of supply chains and sharing a labour force. So you just end up with this worst of all worlds kind of reduction in, go on, what were Alan's words again? Reduction in...
influence in exchange for reduction in access.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll end up basically on the fringes of Europe. And it's not actually an immediate crash that I fear if the deal was to go through, because actually I think people in the financial markets and I think in the economy have been hedging their bets and preparing for all different political eventualities. It's not actually an immediate crash that I fear. It's the long-term decline of our economy because we've lost influence and we've lost access.
If only we had a kind of pithy slogan that could fit on a T-shirt that would explain... Oh, wait, you do.
I do, it's true. I do. So the brilliant Richard Dunstan made me a T-shirt because... who I think tweets at something like, wonky policy wonk. Which is a lovely...
That makes sense when you hear the T-shirt.
So I tweeted a while ago trying to capture this problem that a customs union was necessary but not sufficient for frictionless trade, because the government have promised us frictionless trade. And everybody's policy, the Tories and Labour's, has basically been moving towards the idea of a customs union. The problem with that is that the other rules within the single market also will influence whether or not your trade can be frictionless. So, for example, take sanitary standards, be it for food or, you know, the other rules that protect us against the spread of infection. In the single market, those rules are common across the whole of the European Union area. So you don't, once the goods have passed through the EU border, you don't need to then re-inspect them as they cross other country borders. If you weren't participating in the single market, the common rule book, and all of that, then you would need that inspection. So it's not just, people often worry about tariff barriers. It's not just making sure we haven't got to pay tariffs on stuff. It's not even just like non-tariff barriers, i.e., you know, inspection for customs and the idea of having a customs process at all. It's also about all of these rules and common standards in the single market that mean that stuff can move seamlessly. And so anyway, I'd tweeted this line that customs union is necessary but not sufficient for frictionless trade in response to something that Dominic Raab said. And because I was getting so frustrated, I then retweeted it a couple of weeks ago saying, I'm going to get a t-shirt made of this. And Richard has now made me one.
So I only found out about this when I walked in here today and saw you have the t-shirt out. You're not wearing it, but you're proudly displaying it in your office.
People can have a look at a photo of it on my Instagram.
I'm completely sold on this. What do you think, Steph? I think we should get Joe in the office to mock up a few more, maybe some different designs if people want them.
Sure.
Yeah.
Steph is not looking convinced here.
I think that the slogan, a customs union is necessary but not sufficient for frictionless trade, is the best t-shirt slogan I've ever seen. If listeners want them, tweet at Alison, tweet at
Progress.
Maybe I could
like auction it off at some future Labour Party fundraiser.
Yeah, I mean, I think this will be a real money spinner for us. I'm completely sold on it.
Indeed. I mean, we jest, but it's a very serious point, you know. Steph's not laughing. It is a serious point.
It is. It was just a remarkable transition.
It's a very serious point on a t-shirt. That's true. I think we should probably leave it at that for today. But Alison, thank you. That was quite a ride. Every week we ask a political pub quiz question, which is then answered on Friday's show. This podcast is going out on the 20th of November. So my question is, why is 20th of November an important date in the history of Conservative Party leadership? If you think you know, do give us a shout by emailing office@progressonline.org.uk and you could win a Progress mug. That's all we have time for. I will be back with an extra show on Friday. Please don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify or wherever you listen and leave us a review to let us know what you think. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Progressive Britain podcast. The music was When in the West by Blue Dot Sessions, licensed under Creative Commons. And many thanks to the brilliant Caroline Crampton, who produced this podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.